This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Tuesday, the 26th of February. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Lara Dickinson. On tonight's show, we speak to the writer of Riot, which aired on the ABC last night, shining a spotlight on Australia's 1970s gay rights movement and the passionate individuals who are unwavering in their fight for decriminalisation, recognition and equality, leading to our first Mardi Gras parade, which turned into a protest 40 years ago. With a new Youth Pride Network being formed in Perth, we find out how creating a strong voice for the advocacy of young people by young people gives LGBTQIA plus young people the opportunity to come together to shape a better Western Australia. And with the news of a recent Hep A death in Victoria, we speak to Victoria's Deputy Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, about what this means and to remind the community of men who have sex with men in Victoria that a free Hep A vaccine is available.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Are you a young person in Western Australia who has a passion for getting loud about issues that are important to you? A new advocacy group called the Youth Pride Network is launching in Perth to give LGBTQIA plus young people the opportunity to come together to shape a better Western Australia. The network, auspiced by the Youth Affairs Council of Western Australia, will be made up of LGBTQIA plus young people aged 12 to 25 who have a passion for making WA a better place to be out and proud. The group is formed in the hopes of addressing the systemic inequality that is still faced by LGBTQIA plus young people in Western Australia. We spoke to two of the founders, Kai and Charlotte, about why it's so important for WA's young people to stand up and get involved.
So, myself, Kai, and Nathan, who are the three organisers, we all work at the Affairs Council in WA, which is the peak body for young people, and YACWA, which is the acronym, other types of groups that do similar work for young people with disabilities and young multicultural people. And we're all identify as queer ourselves, and we kind of thought, why doesn't this exist for young queer people? And I guess as well, we thought that there's nothing like this happening in WA at the moment. We've got some amazing advocacy groups over here, but nothing specifically for young people. So we really just wanted to find a way to take all of the passion that we saw for coming out of the community in the marriage equality vote and just generally, and find a way to put it together so that it could be amplified and it could be louder as an advocacy voice. Looking at what issues have a sort of front and centre in the kind of queer debate. So, you know, we've been talking about marriage equality for a really long time, but it's sort of been a case of, you know, if you're a young kid in high school, you sort of don't even know if you're going to make it that far some of the time. So I think that's part of it. And then I also think that while maybe there's sort of been this narrative around, you know, we want to, you know, help the young positive kid in high school who's really struggling and it gets better and doing things for young people. I'm not necessarily sure that there has been a lot of things where it's actually said, you know what, young people are the ones who need to take the mic. Young people are the ones who need to talk about their own issues and talk about things that we aren't hearing about at the moment, like trans homelessness, trans discrimination in schools, which is something that still happens over here in Western Australia. And so especially in Perth and in WA, and especially in regional WA, which is massive, I don't think there's been a lot of opportunities for young people to actually take the mic and say, you know what, we're going to talk about our own issues and we're going to talk about what it means to be a young queer person.
Are you using the same kind of pattern that they have to create the group that you're creating for young LGBTIQA people?
We are sort of basing, to some extent, basing ourselves off of what already exists, but we already are the largest group out of all the ones in Western Australia just from our applications alone. So we have a lot of difference in the way that we'll need to run because we have a much larger cohort. We have to have some more conversations with groups interstate around how they manage a very large body of young people. We're going to have to adapt quite a lot based upon the needs of the young people we're working with.
I mean, the ages of the young people that you guys are looking for is definitely a category of young people that don't get heard enough and don't get to have a voice enough. But how are you guys going to create a space so that everyone can make sure that they can be heard and you can guys can fight for the issues that you need to let people know need to be fought for young people?
I think it's just a case of creating that space for them. We can't, at this stage, know exactly what issues young people are going to want to advocate for because we are still in the application process, but we don't want the three of us that have started it to control the conversation and how we go about creating those avenues. We're going to let the young people involved make those decisions, and our job is to be there to support that and to provide some facilitation and some links to those in power so that we can make sure that those voices are being heard at the top level.
How long have you guys, when did you start looking for, putting out that room for applications?
So we put out a call for applications around 3 weeks ago, and we've had around 80 applications since then, which when you look, and that's come from all over the state. I think we've got is from everywhere from Broome to Albany, which is the top of WA to the bottom of WA. And so a group in WA and a group in Perth, that's massive, and I think it's a testament to the energy that there is at the moment for this kind of work.
It's also a testament to the reality that you've had that bigger response that quickly. It's the fact that there isn't the voice that is needed, and young people want to step up and young people want to be able to be a part of shaping their future.
Yeah, true. In Western Australia, we, during the marriage equality debate, had a very dedicated group of about 15 to 18-year-olds who were all not quite old enough to vote yet, who really drove the conversation, door-knocking, campaigning for marriage equality, even though they couldn't have their say in, you know, the political voting process. And after that was achieved, all that energy was sort of lost because all those young people didn't really know where to take that advocacy from there and how to keep that moving. So we're just trying to provide a space for that to happen and to keep going, because there are so many more issues, particularly in Western Australia, that we need to address.
So a lot of the time during this interview, you guys have said, particularly in Western Australia, and you've painted a little bit of a picture, but just for our listeners, since they're listening from all around Australia, what is it really like in WA for queer people?
We have a lot of legislation in WA and the Northern Territory that is different to the rest of the country. So you can still refuse healthcare to someone for being trans. You can still fire someone from their job for being trans. You can still refuse to house a homeless trans person because of something we call the religious exemption. And we've had a lot of cases of teachers and students at religious schools being kicked out, fired, and so on. And that's totally legal still. And that's particularly prevalent in regional areas where there's regional private schools.
How can young people become a part of this?
So young people who want to be a part of this can go onto our Facebook page, which is the Youth Pride Network, and find the sign-up link. If you live in WA, if you're 12 to 25 and you identify as LGBTIQA+, you can sign up to be either a committee member or a general member there. If you're not from WA and you want to follow what we're doing and you want to get involved, please like us on Facebook or flick us an email at ypn@yakwa.org.au and just have a chat and see how we can get involved. There's nothing that's been like this has ever really been done in WA before, so we're really keen to work with people who've done this before.
That was Dina Kiri speaking to Charlotte and Kai from WA's Youth Pride Network. If you're between the ages of 12 and 25 and identify as an LGBTQIA+ individual, you can find out more via our social media. on Twitter and Facebook.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Victorian men who have sex with men, or MSM, and people who use intravenous drugs are being urged to get a free hepatitis A vaccination following a death last week in Victoria, where more people have become infected over the last 2 months. There have been 42 confirmed cases of hepatitis A linked to this outbreak. There's one further probable case and an additional 22 under early investigation. All cases are male, many MSM who have not travelled overseas, and an increasing number are in people who inject drugs. Hepatitis A is spread from through person-to-person transmission, including via sexual activity, and is not limited to MSM. Transmission can also occur whilst sharing injecting equipment such as needles and through the consumption of contaminated food and water. Dean Arcuri spoke to Victoria's Deputy Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, about why we're reminding the community about free vaccinations just weeks after the vaccine was offered and what this outbreak actually means.
We had a call out, especially in relation to Victoria, for men who have sex with men being able to get a Hep A vaccination just a few weeks ago. What's prompted this further warning now?
We've been tragically notified of a death in someone from hepatitis A. Obviously, hepatitis A can be a serious illness. Normally, it's not very severe, but it can lead to hospitalisation. It can lead to an urgent need for a liver transplant, and it can lead to death, especially in someone who's got liver damage or some pre-existing illness that makes them particularly vulnerable. So we obviously want to protect everyone in this outbreak, but it's a lesson that if you've got a particular vulnerability, it can be a very dangerous illness indeed. So we really want to prompt everyone who's eligible to get the vaccine so that they can protect themselves and don't have to worry about such tragic circumstances.
So who actually is eligible?
So all men who have sex with men and anyone who has injected drugs in the previous 12 months, male or female.
So is there any specific reason why that's the field that is being looked at?
Well, the outbreak we've had has largely involved these two main risk groups. Men who have sex with men have been a risk group in Southern Europe, and a lot of cases have been linked to travel there, but there's now local transmission amongst gay and bisexual men. And so we think that they're going to be an ongoing risk group and require protection to get on top of the outbreak. The same for people who inject drugs, not quite in the same numbers, but certainly a significant additional risk compared to those who don't inject drugs or who aren't gay and bisexual men. So we know that they'll need a vaccine as well to help ensure protection for themselves, but also to stop, you know, this ongoing outbreak in Victoria.
So if you have hepatitis A, what is it you need to look out for, or if you may have contracted it?
Certainly the first symptoms can be quite non-specific, nausea and tummy pain or diarrhoea, but it's followed by fever and jaundice, which is yellowing of the skin and eyes, and dark urine. And that jaundice is the really cardinal sign, the thing that should prompt you to see a GP. But if you're not immunised and you've got those early symptoms, you can also be tested and your GP can do a PCR test to potentially diagnose you even before that jaundice has happened. So if the suspicion's there and you can prompt your GP to think about hepatitis A by saying, look, I'm not immunised, I might be at risk, then that's a useful thing to do as well.
Now, this is something that's available Victoria-wide, isn't it?
That's right. There are two vaccines that we'd like everyone at risk to receive. They need to be taken with a six-month interval between them, at least 6 months. But that first vaccine is the most important one. That'll be the one that starts to protect you within a couple of weeks and provides several months of protection. The second dose, although very useful, is for lifetime protection. But that first dose is the critical one that'll start protection now.
Within our communities, we're often hearing about things like Hep A, Hep B, et cetera, et cetera. But this is actually something that isn't necessarily passed sexually, is it?
No, not necessarily. Microscopic bits of faeces where it's carried, but that can mean close household contact, that can mean sexual contact. It can also mean food preparation or water contamination. So there are lots of mechanisms by which it could be transmitted. But, you know, the answer in all respects is still the same. The vaccine will provide protection. But the other things to note is that if you are confirmed, then you shouldn't be having sex, you shouldn't be preparing food for others, and you should be really fastidious about washing hands, etc. If you're unvaccinated and you haven't got symptoms, you should still take all of those precautions with hygiene and food preparation as, you know, just sensible, sensible things to follow, including changing condoms between sexual partners.
Is this something we also need to let doctors know about? How are they informed that this vaccine's there and they need to look for it with their patients?
I provided a chief health officer advisory recently to alert GPs to the outbreak and to inform them of the way by which they can get the vaccine into their practices. But it's absolutely useful for the community also to prompt GPs to say, look, I'm planning on coming in for a vaccine. Can you please make sure that it's available for me? Travel vaccine clinics have it by default, but GPs won't necessarily have it in stock and they may not have received the advisory from me. So it's a useful prompt to the clinic nurse or the clinic manager to say, you know, can you please let me know if Hep A vaccine's in stock? And if it is, then you can make your appointment.
Now, while we're also obviously letting people know the vaccination is something that's important, and if they feel they're at risk or even available to be able to have it, they should go and get it. This is also about letting people know that if they have the symptoms, early treatment is the best result, isn't it?
That's right. There's only supportive management. There's no specific medication that can treat it. But that diagnosis is important, both to let you know about what you can and can't do and making sure that you're not having sex and preparing food for others. But some people do need hospitalisation, so you may need to be looked after in hospital if you've got significant illness with it. They keep an eye on your liver enzymes and make sure that it's tracking okay and that you're improving before you're sent home again.
When we hear about a death prompting further warning, or when we hear about concerns of a Hep A outbreak, people often go to extremes about what they think that means. How concerned should we be within Victoria about this?
Certainly you don't need to be, you know, need to have undue concern. It's about being aware that there's very easy prevention available through a vaccine. The illness can be severe, but it's mostly a relatively mild illness, but no one would really want it. So, you know, preventing it is absolutely key, but it's not something that's going to be, you know, causing large numbers of deaths or, you know, huge numbers of people being hospitalised. But it's absolutely worthwhile getting the vaccine to, you know, avoid what can be a nasty illness.
That was DNR Curie speaking to Victoria's Deputy Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton. We urge everyone to remember that immunisation is safe, effective and saves lives. Protect yourself and your wider community. If you're at risk or have access to the free vaccination, see your GP and get one today.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Based on real people and real events, Riot aired on the ABC last night, a powerful and moving telemovie reflecting an important chapter in Australia's LGBTQI history. It explores the origins of activism that led to Australia's most famous street parade, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. Last night, social media had many in our communities sharing how watching this telemovie taught them not only about our history that wasn't too long ago, but reminded them that we still have a way to go. From the perspective of Lance Gowland, a devoted activist fighting for his beliefs while juggling family, work and relationships, Riot showed how even with the system against them and the ever-present adversity, including police brutality, legislative persecution, social shunning, job dismissal and general violence, Gowland and his fellow activists decided to come out fighting in their celebration of diversity. Ty Butler spoke to Greg Waters, the writer of Riot, and asked what it was like telling a piece of Australian history in this way.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, down with church hypocrisy.
Now we need to present an agreed position of the gay and lesbian community. Can we start with decriminalisation?
We should be running openly gay candidates in elections. We should be visiting more churches.
I'm not really political. Just being here with me is political.
Stop police attacks on gays, women and blacks. Stop police attacks.
You must have done something to antagonise them. Please don't just arrest people out of the blue.
Divorce papers came. They've subpoenaed both of us.
And surely the court keeps kids with their mother.
Oh, with their lesbian mother.
I'm speaking with Greg Waters, the screenwriter of ABC TV's Riot. Greg, tell us a little bit about the show.
Riot is a telemovie for the ABC. It's about gay and lesbian politics in the 70s, from 72 to 78, and it culminates in a recreation of the first Mardi Gras.
What kind of research goes into writing that and making it authentic?
The original 78ers, people who were around at the time and were part of the movement in that time, were incredibly generous in sharing their stories. And we took advantage of a lot of work by gay and lesbian historians who've put together oral histories of the time.
That's quite something to tell the remaining 78ers, hey, we're going to take your story and tell it on TV to the nation. How did they take that?
They were wonderful, incredibly brave and generous and still willing to do anything to that might further the cause of social justice. They came on set. They met the actors who were playing their characters.
How was that?
Retold their stories. Wonderful, wonderful. Some really, really magical experiences in that. It was great for the actors, and I hope the original people whose stories we're telling enjoyed it just as much.
How did you narrow those stories down? Because there's so many there that you could choose from.
Oh, my God, that was really hard. Carolyn Anderson, who came up with the story of this, was instrumental in that. She really focused in on Lan. And by choosing one person, really, and making his story the centre of it, it was a bit of a sort of template on which we were able to then build the future story.
Now, the story is centred around Lance Gowland. What was it like writing that character?
He was amazing. He was an activist and unionist and peace activist and communist and all-round Bolshevik ratbag, but he was gloriously brave and passionate and utterly committed to this and many other causes.
And he sadly passed away 10 years ago, but you spoke with his children?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. His children, but also his friends, also people who were part of the movement at the time and who were Lance's close friends and who knew him. And we had a wealth of wonderful Lance stories, you know, many that we could not possibly use, mostly from his sons. They told them pretty eyebrow-raising stories, but he was a great character.
What do you think he'd make of being, you know, the lead character in a telemovie like this?
Lance was a leader. Lance was really prepared to put it out there. He was brave about being open at a time when nobody was open, at a time that it was illegal. And if he thought that this would help advance the course of justice for gay men, lesbians and you know, oppressed peoples of any sort, he would be all in favour of it.
Riot is obviously based on real events and real people. What kind of pressure do you feel to get that right?
People have been very generous in allowing us to dramatise this story. Everybody's got different memories of the time, and so we really had to pick a path through the story and just accept that we were dramatising, not making a documentary.
The police raided my surgery today.
If we go to court and we lie, we just agree it's something to be ashamed of.
Personally, I am sympathetic, but you need to demonstrate that the wider community supports change.
We should be overthrowing the government.
Surely we can do both. We can have law reform and the revolution.
How?
What does the legacy of the 78ers mean to you?
That we could not have gay and lesbian rights as they are today without those incredibly brave people. They created, you know, a template for later activists. You couldn't have marriage equality right now if those people hadn't come out in the 1970s, hadn't marched, hadn't protested, hadn't put together an event like Mardi Gras. We owe them an immense debt.
You mentioned marriage equality, which, of course, became law late last year.
While we were shooting.
So how do you manage that then? Because if you're dealing with what is essentially an uncertain, like we don't know whether it's going to come back as a yes or a no result, how do you approach producing a show where there's so much uncertainty around kind of the central topic?
It was the same things. We were going through exactly the same things. You know, political leaders who claimed to be on our side, but didn't have the courage to actually introduce, you know, legislation, you know, insisted on a show of community support before they'd make courageous decisions around decriminalisation. Incredible apathy and backlash. We were going through exactly the same things in 2017 as they'd gone through in the 70s. We just had, they'd picked a path through it for us.
And what message do you want people to take home from Riot?
Be brave, be courageous, be committed, and have fun.
I think we should have a street party. We're going to close down Oxford Street and have a riot of colour and fun.
Jim!
What?
We're going to have a Mardi Gras.
Last night, social media was abuzz with everyone sharing how Riot made them feel. BJ decided to share his feelings with us here on The Informer.
Coming from a place of where I worked in the gay scene in WA for 7 years and doing small amounts of community events, it really gave you this sense of purpose and that your little contribution to things really did matter. And then it also makes you question within yourself if you're doing enough in the community to be able to continue the legacy that was given to us from those past. You know, growing up in WA, we didn't really have so much of lessons about the past. And then all of a sudden, growing up, there's so many amazing Australian filmmakers that have come through and have given our storyline this beautiful way of conveying what has happened in the past and why it is such an importance for us to celebrate such huge event and just why Mardi Gras has become such a strong driving force within the community. I think for younger generations to learn about the past, it's something that is great because it's an easy go-to and the information is just laid out for us in such an ease that we actually gain a momentum and more purpose to what we actually do. I love how quick the community comes together when it comes to things like this as well, and seeing just how important it is for all of us to be able to share the stories. I mean, some of the stories, like watching the movie about the Tasty Raids and hearing like the past documentaries that have been on like SBS, it's nice that in Australia we're able to have a platform for that sort of filmmaking to come out into like general public instead of it just being released inside cinemas. It's incredible what we can do nowadays.
Is everyone enjoying the Mardi Gras? Around the world, the fight is on.
That was BJ sharing his thoughts on Riot and Ty Butler speaking to the head writer of the telemovie, which you can watch now on ABC iView.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip that you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Lara Dickinson. Up next is Outtakes.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.